You might like to turn in your Bible to Isaiah chapter 43. Isaiah chapter 43. And in the light of our early snowfall, in the light of our ominous days, Isaiah 43, God is encouraging Israel if they would be encouraged. But now, thus saith the Lord that created thee, O Jacob, and he that formed thee, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name, thou art mine. Keeping in mind verse 7. But everyone that is called by my name, for I have created him for my glory, I have formed him and have made him. Now, having said that, Israel had a very, very privileged place and position in history. History was being outworked. It was to be worked out by way of Israel. Israel was to be the chief nation of the world. Israel's unbelief put them down in the bottom, and right now you're in the times of the Gentiles, starting with Babylon all the way to the 10 toes, where we're into the foot and the toes now. So here we are looking. But Israel, none of those Gentile nations are going to be the centerpiece. Israel is going to be the centerpiece in the millennium. It must be. It is God's will, it is God's plan, and it is for God's glory. And he has created them for his glory. Now, having said that, wonderful plan, nation, wonderful future. But it isn't going to go easy. It's going to go with the bumps and lots of ups and downs. And so in the like we shared Sunday night. And so moving forward, verse 2. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. So it isn't that there isn't going to be difficulty. There is. But God is going to get them through it. That's why Israel has survived. They're unique. They are the most unique nation in all of history. No nation is like them. In lots of ways, our nation is a special nation. There's no nation like it. But our nation isn't meant to be the leader. Israel is meant to be the leader. Just keep that in mind. So you aren't trying to say, well, we had a wonderful position, place in history. And we did. We're a very young nation compared to the nations. We're just like babies on planet Earth. Wow. But, Israel is the nation. So we have to keep in mind the nation. So God, where you're working, you're working with Israel. And in the process, the times of the Gentiles are outworking themselves. And things are going down the corridor of time. And all those nations, Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, Rome, all of them have come and gone. And we're in the movement. But God has kept Israel wonderfully so. There's always a remnant. There's always Israel. Always. And now we have a little group of them over there in Jerusalem, Palestine. Now, over, if you would, in Isaiah chapter 45. Isaiah 45, and in verse 5. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. The reason that they may know from the rising of the sun in the east and from the west that there is none beside me, I am the Lord, there is none else, there's no one else. No matter where you go, north, south, east, west, and you travel all around the world with all of the religions and all of the gods, no matter where you go, no matter what culture, what background, a big Buddha, a little Buddha, God said, I'm the only one. So no matter where you go, you don't get hung up, because there's only one God. Now, and thus, in verse 7, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do these things, and I am the Creator. And remember now, in the process we share in Genesis chapter 3, verse 5, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The day you eat thereof, you will be in trouble. And they did eat. And then they knew evil. They paid the price of disobedience, which was they lost their relationship to God, and they died. They died spiritually, and they would die physically. And ultimately, once they physically leave earth, they would die what is called the second death. 1, 2, 3. Eternal death. Separation from God. Now, in the process of that, God create allows evil. Remember, we shared evil. Yeah, you know it. Here you are looking. Oh, Jim, you're right there. Chapter 47. And in verse 11. Therefore shall evil, there's your word, come upon thee. Thou shalt not know from whence it riseth, and mischief shall fall upon thee. Thou shalt not be able to put it off. The desolation shall come upon thee suddenly, which thou shalt not know. Evil, I'm going to allow the results that happen when I'm missing. I'm going to let happen when you remove me. I'm going to let you show evil, that which is unprofitable, not right, not healthy, healthy, healthy. It's evil. It has no value to it. You leave me out, there is no good. There's only evil. And God allows evil. God allows it. God doesn't put his finger and make evil. We evil is the result of leaving God out. So now, everyone is going to know me from the east and from the west, and they're going to know me. And the centerpiece is Israel. It isn't us. It's Israel. So we don't want to get too much here. Good in here. It's Israel. What needs to happen on planet Earth to make Israel ready to believe God? And that is the tribulation. Tribulation requires the treaty, a 7-year treaty with the Antichrist, to happen. And the 7-year treaty, the 7 years, will produce a tribulation, Deuteronomy 4, which is required. Israel does not pay attention unless you twist their arm. They don't pay attention, like a lot of people. You got to do, got to go out of the way to get them. That's the target where we're moving now. So, having said that, chapter 46. In chapter 46, picking up, please, in verse 9. Remember the former things of old. Why? For I am God. There is none else. I am God. There is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, I will do all my pleasure. What I started in Genesis 1:1, God created the heaven and the earth. I created Israel. I allowed all of this. All of this has to work out. And God, somewhere in the journey of history, time, are you missing? No. God is never absent in the program, in the movement. He's never missing. Now, thus, from begin to end, I'm telling you, I have a plan, a purpose, a wonderful purpose. Now, over if you would, chapter 48. Chapter 48 and in verse 9. For my name's sake will I defer, delay, hold back. For my name's sake will I defer mine anger. Why? And for my praise will I refrain, will I withhold for thee, that I cut thee not off. I'm not going to eliminate you. I'm not going to do it. I have a plan. You are the center of my plan. I promised Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. It's the plan. Problems on earth with humans are there. They were all all the human problems and predicaments and conditions were considered when I started. I already know them. I already have the answer to them. Now, in verse 10, behold, I have refined thee, but not with silver. Well, how did you do it? With nice pleasantries, a little island, and somewhere, and everything was okey-dokey? No. Behold, I have refined thee, but not with silver. I have chosen thee in the furnace of affliction. And I started, you started, with 400 years in Israel, in Egypt. And your life has been like that. And I've been trying to help you to purify the gold. And they purify the gold by the fire. The hotter the fire, the more the fire, the greater the heat, the more the dross is removed, etc. Now, so, in the furnace of affliction. And why did you do it, God? Is it because of some human thing with all of our problems, etc.? No, I have a wonderful plan, and I want you to know, verse 11, that for mine own sake, and for mine own sake will I do it. That's why I'm going to do what I do. So it isn't because of you did, and you did, and you did, and he did, and she did. God said, I did. I did it. It's my plan, my solution, my answer. There is no answer from humans. I have to answer it. That's why we have what is called, wonderfully so, grace, mercy. Where would we be without it? Where would anyone be? That's where we live. That's how we get along with God. Because he gives us his wonderful grace and mercy in the person of our Lord Jesus Christ. So now, and again, verse 11, for mine own sake, even for mine own sake will I do it, for how should my name be polluted, and I will not give my glory unto another. In other words, I'm not going to give my wonderful plan, purpose, program for any human to mess up. I'm not going to do it. I'm doing what I do for my own sake. And so, God, thank you. And you know all those wonderful things. God said, his ways and his thoughts are higher than what? Higher than the heavens. God, so we are good. It's out of our hands, and yet we're here, we're participating down in history in a most wonderful way, a wonderful time. Now, having said that, and keeping that in mind, if you would, and verse 12, "Hearken unto me, O Jacob, and Israel my called. I am he, I am the first, I am also the last. I'm the only God. You need to respond to me as a nation. You need to do it. You need to honor me to understand. Israel, there's no nation on earth that has been persecuted. One war after another, one country after another, in and out of the land. And then they're scattered all over with the Assyrians and the Babylonians and Titus in 70 AD, and they're all over, and they're anti-Semitism, and they're beaten up, persecuted, all over. No one's like that. No one. There's no nation like that. You don't find the Portuguese persecuted. The Muslims? No. Just Jews. Good reason. Jews belong to God. When Jews are out of sync, God's not going to bless them. He's going to educate them by tribulation, by trouble. Now, over, if you would please, in your Bible, to Nahum. Nahum. Chapter 1. It's there. There is a Nahum, you know. And Nahum the prophet, here's the Assyrian captivity, 722 BC, right here. Here's the captivity. And then the years go, and we go here about 621, right in through there. And here is Nahum. Nahum's there. And not only is Nahum there, my dear friends, but Zephaniah is there. Not only is Zephaniah there, but Jeremiah is there. Here's all three of them. One, two, three. And here's Josiah, like we're looking at on Wednesday in Jeremiah study. Here's the King Josiah with Jeremiah, and here's Jeremiah and Zephaniah and Nahum. Now, here, remember, and then you know from Wednesday, if you could remember, Nebuchadnezzar is coming down. And God is trying to tell him by way of Jeremiah that you need to get ready and fix things because he's coming. Now, in the process of that, in Nehemiah, having Jeremiah telling him that, Nahum, what are you doing? In the meanwhile, what do you say? Here's the Josiah, here's the Israelites and the king, and they're looking, here's Jeremiah telling him about Nebuchadnezzar, and here's Nahum pointing up to the north, up there, where Nebuchadnezzar is going to come from, and up there is Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of Assyria. And the Assyrians took the 10 tribes in the north in 722, and the Assyrians are going to be beat up by Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to take them over. He's going to defeat them. So Nahum and the Jews down here in Judah, what are they doing? Well, they're down here, and they're oh, boy, what a relief. They listen to Nahum, as you'll see in a sec. And, boy, Nahum the prophet says, be of good cheer. You don't need to worry about Assyria coming down again to try to get you. You don't have to worry about them anymore. And what a relief. They aren't thinking about Nebuchadnezzar coming down. They're just relieved about that part of it. Now, thus, chapter 1, Nehemiah, verse 1. The burden of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. Remember, Nineveh Nineveh is destroyed in 612. And what are you doing, Nahum? I'm telling you, God is going to eliminate Assyria. And that's what it's all about. Assyria must be destroyed. I'm all done with Assyria. I'll be all done with Babylon eventually. Right now, I'm all done with Assyria. And Nahum hammers it out. Verse 1. Verse 2. God, what about you? God is jealous. And the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries. And he reserveth wrath for his enemies. That's a rather ominous statement. Revenge, revenge, revenge. I'm going to avenge. Avenge. Because they were given an assignment, and then they overdid the assignment. Like every single Gentile nation has an assignment, and they forget God in it, and they go past what they were to do. Thus, God is a jealous God, and he's going to take vengeance. Verse 3, God in his is powerful God. So when we, Israel, Judah, here you are, you need to know something about God. God is slow to anger and great in power and will not at all account the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind, in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet, walking like, just like walking on dust on the clouds. Wow. Verse 4. He rebuketh the sea, he maketh it dry. He drieth up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth, Carmel, and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, the hills melt, and the earth is burned at his presence. Yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation? Who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is like fire, and the rocks are thrown or shattered down by him. He crushes them. Wow. God, verse 7, is good. A stronghold in the day of trouble. And he knoweth them that trust in him. So here's Nahum telling you, with no question at all, I'm going to destroy Nineveh. And Israel, Judah is given relief. Wow. Little relief? No. Only for a moment. Because Nebuchadnezzar's coming. The times of the Gentiles are going to go. And thus the wonderful truth. God, are you going to be on the job, taking care of things as history rolls down the corridor? Nations rise up and nations fall. Now, over if you would, to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. God sends storm. I would have taken time to read that, but I won't. In Isaiah, God sends a storm. They're using a storm. God sends a storm. God sends storms. We have one. There it is. Hebrews chapter 11. Picking up, if I can, in verse 27. We read it the other day. Just to note it again, we read it on Sunday, God is invisible. By faith Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. Here's the king of Egypt, Pharaoh. Wow. He didn't. there was someone bigger than Pharaoh, better than Pharaoh. Not forsaking Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, to hung in there, persevere, as seeing, mentally grasping, understanding God's wonderful person and presence, him who is invisible. Now you could see Pharaoh, you could see his army, you could see his weaponry, you could see his punishment, but they couldn't see God. Moses looked to God, the invisible God, in whose presence we sit. And all those snowflakes fall, and God knows every one of them. All those snowflakes, if we were to look, you know, the exercise, the studies that have been done, they have never found a snowflake that is the same. Never found a snowflake that was the same. And I have to tell you, just the little bunch I see out there would be enough job just studying them. Wow. God, here we are. And Moses was able to hang in there. Egypt has its purpose, and God has his purpose. And God, Moses, was looking to God. Moses is going to be the tool to raise up Israel, as you know. Now, in the light of that, here's history outworking itself, chapter 11, verse 13. These all died. These are all people that God trusts the invisible God. God trusts God. God, why? How do things happen? We don't want to get disappointed, because then we were looking for something that must not have happened. We get discouraged and we lose courage because we thought we'd be strong, and we find that our strength was not sufficient to do it. Our knowledge, our strength was not sufficient. We lose courage. We get discouraged, disappointed. Wow, hold it. But we got to stop and look to God. And they did. Moses did. And Nahum, etc. Verse 13, Hebrews 11. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country, verse 15, from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to return. They could, if they could think about it, I could be this, I could go back to this. They weren't thinking of going backwards. They're going forwards. Where are we going? We can't go backwards. We don't want to go. We say, boy, if we could just go back and change something. But we can't go backwards. We have to go forwards. Forward. The only way to go, because that's where it's going to work out. I can't go back and try to make something. No, it's all gone now. And thus, verse 16. Now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. And thus he's looking. They're looking. They aren't looking for anything here. They're looking for what God has for them in the future. God's wonderful, wonderful future to be outworked. Now, over to verse 32. And other people had to do the same thing. And they had to hang in there. And thus, verse 32, what shall I more say? Shall I more say? For the time would fail to tell me of Gideon and Baruch, and Samson, and Jephthah, of David also, and of Samson, of Samuel, and of the prophets. Do you know how they all made it? Who through faith subdued kingdoms? That means the kingdom, the cause, the course of history did not make them go off course. All the things that happened in history kept them on course. They didn't get over here and up and down. They stayed focused on course, on course, of course, on course. Now, and thus, again, verse 33, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured. On the one hand, blessing, and the other hand, it seemed like God didn't care. God was outworking all that he was doing. Tribulation coming up, you know, the believers that will be living in the tribulation are going to be sheep for the slaughter. Revelation 13, God is going to put them out, and the bad guys are going to go boom, 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 boom. What are you going to do? Now don't get caught up, because they could do something. Don't you worry about it. Now, your life, your relationship is absolutely forever uninterrupted. We interrupt it by unbelief. But the moment our heart stops beating, if we're saved, we will never have that interruption again. By that I mean unbelief. When you die, there's no more unbelief. Understand? No more. Now, here in verse 36, and others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yet moreover of bonds, imprisonment, bonds, chains, and imprisonment. Thus, they were stoned, they were sawn asunder. That's not very good. They were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskin and goatskin, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. Wow. Of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and dens and caves of the earth. They were strangers and pilgrims. The world did not applaud and approve them. And when the world applauds and approves the believer, something is terribly wrong. Something's wrong. Shouldn't we want to be? No. There's no way. If God is having his way in your heart, the world rejects him. It will reject you. That doesn't mean you try to be reasonable and everything in life and everything. You live with everyone as peaceably, Timothy, as much as you can, but hey. Now, in chapter 11, the end. Verse 39, for and all these, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God, having provided some better thing for us. What is that? That they, without us, should not be perfected. God has seen ahead, and everything has order, and I am not going to let them have the edge. I'm going to see that everyone is going to finish before I make payment of reward, of grace and blessing. I'm going to finish. I'm not going to reward these guys in their way up here yet. Give you another way to see that. What do you know? 1 Thessalonians 4. God will not give them, Peter, James, and John, a new body. Until what? Until he gives you one. They cannot precede you. Everything must have its order, and not everything mishmash out of order. Thus, Thus, here we are, waiting. We're still here, and everyone else is waiting in heaven and earth, waiting for the outworking of it. Now, having said that, chapter 13. Remember the book of Hebrews, maturity, growing, going forward. Chapter 13, picking up, please, in verse 13. Let us go forth, therefore, unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. He is crucified outside the gate. We don't do it inside. This is outside. Where are we going to meet him? At the cross. Outside. He said, they hated me. They're going to what? Hate you. You stay with me where I am. And you're going to be considered a bad guy. But stay with me. Stay with me. And even though, don't get discouraged. Don't get disappointed. Over, if you would, to verse 14. For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come. We're looking for his soon wonderful coming. God, we're looking for you. And thus our faith, a whole chapter on faith, with our faith is resting. Our faith is resting on God's facts. God, you have a wonderful plan. And you've already spoke of it a little bit, so you can see it. A political plan, an economic plan that works out by way of Israel. Israel being the key nation in all of the world. All the nations of the world will be blessed because of Israel. But not yet. Not yet. It's working itself out. The key nation, the key thought is Israel. Not America, not England, not Europe. Israel. And so now we're resting in the facts, resting in God's facts. Faith is resting what God has said. We're strangers and pilgrims. That's right. We're waiting. And we're rejoicing. Not only are we resting, but we're rejoicing in God's facts. Why? The outworking of history from a human standpoint is unknown. The God of this world has a plan, and we have know where it's going, but how it goes, we don't know. We know how it ends up. We know how it ends up. So what are we doing? Well, we know the plan. We know God. We know the facts. And therefore, we're rejoicing because we know the end of the game. It would be if you had, you may not be a sports fan or something, football, basketball, something, whatever ball you want to have, bowling. I'm just kidding. Whatever you have, and you have it, right? And what that's a distraction for us, and it's there. So here's the game. The game's being played. Critical game. Wow, the world championship is at stake. And so here's the thing going, and the play goes here, and the pass of the whatever they're doing, and the ball is dropped, and the other team picks it up and scores a touchdown. Wow, and it's going. You like this, right? You dummy, why don't you catch that? Right, okay. Here it is, ongoing. And wow, and you get halftime. Oh, you know, what's the thing? And they come out, they get another touchdown. Oh, wow. And you wonder, wow, boy, it's a very tiring thing, isn't it? Watching the game? You don't know. You're going up and down. You're have a heart attack. I mean, what can I tell you? But, if you knew the end of the game, if you knew the end, if you knew that all of that is going to end up and your team is going to win by 10 points, would that make a difference how you see all this? Would that make a difference when I drop the pass? Because you know the end. Does that make a difference when something happens over here? Because you know the what? You know the end. You know the end. You know how it's going to come out. That's why you can hang in there. Because you know the end, the hope that is set before us now. So we're rejoicing. And the truth of God's word gives us great revival, great refreshment, so that we can proceed forward without any doubt, question. Doubt sees the obstacles. Faith sees the way. Doubt sees the darkest nights. Faith sees the day. Doubt dreads to take a step. Faith soars on high. Doubt questions, who believes? Faith answers, I do. See? Here we are. What do you think? We're going to stop. Because it's still snowing. And if you get stuck, you call us. And